Pradesh on several occasions. More recently, a video emerged online of what appeared to be a previously unreported violent clash between the two armies. The video was reportedly filmed in the Indian state of Arunachal Pradesh at the line of actual control, the de facto border between the two countries. The growing India-US bonhomie has not also been taken well by China. In a recent speech by the Chinese foreign minister while taking stock of China's foreign policy during the year 2022, he primarily focused on China's troubled relationship with the U.S. Wang Yi, while lashing out at the U.S., pointed to its relations with China as erroneous policy. China has also not been happy with India's membership in the U.S.-led quadrilateral security dialogue. The Quad, compromising the U.S., India, Japan, and Australia, often referred to as Asian NATO, is aimed at thwarting the Chinese plans for the Asia-Pacific region. China has maintained that it is focusing on strategic stability in relation to other major countries to make the world a better place.
Now, to talk more on this, we are joined by Mr. Chris McRain from Manchester. He's a geopolitical analyst. Mr. McRain, welcome to the program. Now, let's begin with China's recent statement to work with India for better relations between the two countries. How do you see it, especially coming at a time when the two sides recently engaged in clashes near the Indian state of Arunachal Pradesh?
I think China's main goal, as it has been for the past 30 years of development, is the progress of a multipolar world. And India is a big part of that. I know they do have a disagreement of a dispute over territory around that area. I know there are treaties in place that stop weapons being used in that area. If you see troop movements in that area, they almost look like medieval armies because they're all carrying melee weapons rather than ballistic weapons. There's no guns. So they are making some sort of steps to make peace. But a lot of this is about economic development, which is a big part of it. Obviously, one of the main adversaries in the world as it is today is almost putting the brakes on American interference. So China showing that sort of hand of friendship in aiding co-opting the Indian development together is a really big, important step, I think, and it shows a lot of maturity in the Chinese position.
Mr. McRain, how do you look at India's policy regarding China? Are there any takers for cordial China-India relations in India, or India wants to focus on getting closer to the West, especially the US seeing China as an arch rival in the region?
I think the American position very much wants it to be an arch rival. America have been courting the government of Modi for quite some time in the hope of it being some sort of bulwark against Chinese development. You do see sometimes where it does look like it could go that way and then it somehow tethers the other. I personally don't believe it is going that way. Now, China, India is obviously a big part of BRICS, which is the development program alongside Russia and China throughout the conflict of last year between Russia and Ukraine. India have been one of the major importers of Russian oil, which is very much sort of putting it in the Chinese sort of block, as you would. If we were talking in sort of Cold War terms, China would be now sort of appearing in the Indian sort of sphere. So I think there is a lot to work out between China and India, but I think in the end, I think economic development will come out as the number one player, and China are India's best hope at that. They're part of the One Belt, One Road initiative, which is obviously going to help a lot of developing nations in that region, which is obviously something that America don't want to see happen.
Mr. McRain, the Chinese foreign minister's remarks regarding the hostile attitude of the U.S. towards the country and its impact on the world politics, do you see any shift in the relation the two countries currently share?
I think we are in the decades of the coming war with China. America have perceived themselves as the number one for so long. Their entire identity is built on being number one, the number one military, the number one economy. And they are very close to losing that position. And I think it's like a child losing its toy. It's going to lash out. And I think in the way it's going to lash out is in the form of a conflict with China. It is a conflict that I do believe that they are destined to lose. It does seem to be poised towards the territory of Taiwan. Obviously, the world are in this difficult situation with Taiwan where nobody recognizes it as a country, but behave that it is a country as such. They carry on arming it, where it is, in fact, a breakaway country. It is the result of a civil war that they lost. And any other territory in the world would treat it as such. If India or Iran won a civil war against part of its breakaway section, that breakaway section wouldn't then be able to make diplomatic demands as Taiwan has been doing.
You're listening to The Subcontinent, broadcast by IRIB English Radio. This weekly program reviews ongoing developments in India, Pakistan, and Bangladesh. Listen to The Subcontinent every Monday here on IRIB English Radio.
For Kashmir, 2022 was a year of misfortunes, with New Delhi introducing new policies to integrate the region into the Indian Union. The BJP government in India continues to follow in the Israeli regime's footsteps in Kashmir in a bid to change the Muslim-majority region's demography. In the latest development, India has implemented a law that allows leasing governmental land to outsiders. This move is aimed at further disempowering and alienating the local Muslim population of the region.
Since the abrogation of Article 370 in August 2019, the Himalayan region of Kashmir has lost its limited autonomy. In the last 3 years, changing the land policies has been the prime focus of the BJP government in New Delhi. As the region doesn't have an elected state government and is directly ruled by New Delhi, the central government has time and again passed orders in the past few years to allow non-local residents to settle, work, and buy property in the Kashmir Valley. The central government's anti-Kashmir policies have led to fear and apprehension of demographic change among the local Muslim population. The rules lately introduced by the government require local traders to return the land leased from the government. According to the government order, anyone not adhering to the rule will be forcefully evicted from the property. The land can now be bought by non-Kashmiris, paving the way to establish settlements in the valley on the model of Israeli settlements in occupied Palestinian territories. Hospitality, being one of the important sectors in the state, is also facing the brunt of this policy as the government has decided to auction the properties and permits leaving hundreds of Kashmiris associated with the sector on the brink of joblessness.
The past year has also witnessed increased persecution of journalists working in the Kashmir region. The homes of several journalists have been raided, with scores being summoned by the police. According to analysts, this move has been designed to silence the media and prevent it from publishing news deemed controversial or critical of New Delhi. This has instilled fear amongst journalists working in the region, as they have been abstaining from reporting about the politics of the region.
With media in Kashmir operating in an atmosphere of fear, the coverage of local dailies is now limited to state-sponsored events, portraying an all-colorful governmental picture of the valley. New Delhi has been resorting to tough laws such as the Public Safety Act, which incurs 2 years in jail without trial. Many journalists have been booked under this act past year. It has further terrified the journalistic fraternity in the Himalayan region, which has already been maintaining silence since the abrogation of Article 370 by the BJP government in New Delhi. According to the annual World Press Freedom Index conducted by Reporters Without Borders, India has dropped from 142nd to 150th rank in the past year. The same report calls India one of the worst countries for media persons. The situation in Kashmir is more worrisome as reporters are harassed by the police and the paramilitary forces on a regular basis. In a bid to control and intimidate journalists working in the valley, the government last year closed the doors of the Kashmir Press Club, a democratically elected journalistic body. The Indian government has also been restricting Kashmiri journalists from international travel. A Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist was recently barred by the government from traveling to receive her award.
Now, to have more insight on this, we are joined by Mr. Munir Ahmed from Islamabad. He's a senior journalist and political analyst. Mr. Ahmed, first of all, welcome to the program. Now, how do you view the recent land rules issued by the government? Is this an attempt to change the demography of the state of Jammu and Kashmir and a bid to change its Muslim majority status?
From August 5th, 2019, Indian government is trying to change the demographic status of Muslims in Indian illegally occupied Kashmir, and the new land rules is also one of them. And since the annexation of Kashmir with India, they are trying in many ways to change the demographic position status of population over there. And certainly they have already taken several other steps as well. And they have given several hectares of land to different people living in other cities of India. And they are giving many leases agreements to them so that they could establish their own businesses in India. And land reforms, the new land reforms, quote unquote, would certainly is an attempt to give all the land of Indian illegally occupied Kashmir to the Indian businessmen. Those resources of occupied Kashmir would being transferred to the non-locals, and that is really a terrible situation. Though the international community is voicing against the annexation of August 5, but still India is not hearing the voices of the people and voices of the locals, though they are protesting on the streets, and they have been under curfew for around 3 years. Having curfew and changing the demographic position in Indian illegally occupied Kashmir is a right point of concern for Pakistan as well, and for the entire Muslim communities across the world as well.
Now, Mr. Ahmed, hospitality is one of the most important business sectors in the valley. The government has decided not to extend the lease of the local hoteliers and open the option of lease auction for the non-locals as well. Do you see this as an attempt to break the economic backbone of Kashmir?
Hospitality is certainly a big business for Kashmiri people, and they have been doing wonderful business, and most of the international tourism in India is based on what the Indian illegally occupied Kashmir offers. They have wonderful places, lakes, and the environment they have is really a sellable commodity in terms of tourism. Now, the Indian government is giving all the leases of the hotels and all the other facilities of the tourism to non-locals. That is really a dent to the entire economy of the local. They have already given the other buildings owned by the government and the institutions, even owned by the private sector, to the non-locals over there to do businesses. And the agricultural lands, as I mentioned, has already been given to non-locals. The entire interventions by the government are mean to dent the to weaken the Muslim community living in the occupied Kashmir, and this is really terrible and against the international norms. And the people are the local people are protesting. Surely they have reservations, and the international community shall come up to help them out. And in the wake of a new Cold War, they will be having economic recession in the coming days as well. As you have seen, that the economy is becoming weaker and weaker post-COVID. So in this situation, these government interventions will be killing the local economy, especially make more weaker the Muslim communities there.
Mr. Ahmed, let's talk about the mauling, the freedom of press, and also the clampdown on the journalists. Is New Delhi sending across the word that no voice of dissent can be tolerated?
Indian government has banned media in occupied Kashmir. And even they banned the visit of the international community over there, especially the UN observers. Were not allowed to go in the occupied Kashmir so that they could not observe what has been happening over there. And more than 50 journalists have been killed in the recent years. And this is quite alarming that they have canceled declarations of many print media and electronic media, YouTube, channels, the web-based channels are already banned. And such kind of imposition of ban on the voice of the locals is really worrisome. I believe like this is a strangulation of the voice of freedom they are raising in Kashmir. And it should be condemned. And this, if you have seen last year and even in 2020, the Human Rights Watch reports have condemned all these atrocities there. And they have also raised a voice for the freedom of press over there and engaging and allowing the other people go over there and see by themselves. But they were not allowed, and the Indian government is not even bothering by the international reports and all the protests there the locals are carrying out. This is really strange, and I don't know what could be done to convince the Indian government to have Kashmiris their own voice.
Last but not least, sir, how do you see the future of journalism in Kashmir? Can we hope for any good days ahead, or will this atmosphere of fear continue?
I don't see any future of journalism or the business of the local Kashmiri Muslims. As the Indian government has banned all the publications, and there is no internet access at all, and they also have stopped the YouTube transmissions and the access to YouTube and the uploading of such kind of material over there. The journalists cannot report even to international media. If some journalists could reach out to international media or write something about the actual situation in Kashmir, they face consequences. In that context, certainly there is no future of journalism and the Muslim community over there. Again, I would urge UN organizations and other human rights organizations to put Kashmir on their priority agenda. Otherwise, the humanity in Kashmir will be suffering for all the atrocities Indian government are imposing on them.
There you have it, Mr. Munir Ahmed. He's a senior journalist and political analyst from Islamabad. Thank you for being on the program, sir. Now, let's see what people have to say on social media.
Ittehad al-Muslimin wrote, "People of Jammu and Kashmir will forcefully resist every challenge by New Delhi to change the demography of the state by scrapping Article 35A. Tajammul Islam tweeted, "New J&K land laws are not in the interest of people of Jammu and Kashmir, as these will further widen the gap between New Delhi and people of Jammu and Kashmir. At BJP for India is trying to change the demography of Jammu and Kashmir, which will have serious consequences."
And that was our episode about the controversial land rules being implemented by India in the state of Jammu and Kashmir, and also the China-India relations continuing to nosedive amid simmering border tensions. We shall meet again next week. So till then, take great care. Allah, Allah,
Allah, Allah. اون چیزی که انسان را مطمئن می‌کند ذکر خدا، ذکر الله تطمئن می‌کند.
Be aware, the hearts find rest in Allah's remembrance.
Spring of truth.
Allahu ya Allah subhanahu. Allahu ya Allah, walhamdulillah. Allahu wa la ilaha illallah. Allahu ya Allah, wallahu akbar.
Imam Khomeini's viewpoint on condition of leadership. In Islam, it is the law which rules. The noble prophet, peace be upon him and his pure progeny, was also following the law, the divine law. He was not able to violate it. Addressing the Holy Prophet, Allah the Exalted says that if you say something against that which I say, I will seize you and cut off your aorta. If the Prophet was a director or a person, the people were afraid lest he may dictate to them on enjoying the whole power, then a jurist could also be a dictator.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome to the program Spring of Truth from IRIB English Radio. I'm your host Sayyid Mohsin Naqvi with the viewpoints of Imam Khomeini in regards to the self-building and combat with the self. In one of his speeches, he mentioned that which is necessary for all of us is to begin with our own soul. We must not be pleased with adjusting or rectifying appearances. Rather, we must start with our hearts, from our brains or minds, and see that each day we are somewhat better than the day before. Now, in this part of his speech, obviously, he's talking about a very important point. Sometimes people, when they change their appearance, they think that they're so spiritual, they think they have become pure, their soul has achieved the purification, but they never work on purification. They never work on their heart, the feelings that they have, the thoughts that they have, the beliefs that they have. If we want the purification of the soul, we need to purify our beliefs. When we believe in Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, it should be a pure believing in Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. The belief on the day of judgment, the belief that we need to perform good deeds.
Ya Rabbana, salli ala Taha al-Nabi wa alihi. Sallallahu alayhi. Salli ala.
It is the soul which is the actual thing. It's not the appearance. Yes, appearances is important because it should be in line with the goal that we want to achieve. We cannot say like, for example, my soul is pure, so I don't need a hijab. Sometimes like we hear these things that they say it should be the heart of a person which should be the clean. The appearance is not important. Yes, appearance is important because when heart is pure, the heart is giving an order to my body that, look, if I want to be pure, if I want to remain pure, it is necessary that you need to make your appearance which should be in line with this purification. This pure heart tells me to have the hijab. This pure heart tells me to not to backbite. This pure heart tells me not to accuse people wrongly. This heart tells me not to belay people. This heart tells me not to oppress people. So all these things, the appearances that I have, it should be in line with the soul. Therefore, the soul is important. The soul is very important. And if someone, sometimes we see like they change their appearance and they think they have become pure, this is not the way. The appearance itself does not help. Yes, it helps a bit that it takes you one step ahead. But if you want to have the purification, then obviously you need to work on your soul. And that's what Imam Khomeini is saying, that you need to work on your heart from your brain, your mind, and then become pure, inshallah.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
A diverse range of programs. Youth, spirituality, culture, Eastern tales, roundtable discussions, politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
Our website is www.parstoday.com/en.
Insights into the Holy Quran.
Indeed, this Quran guides to what is most upright and gives the good news to the faithful who do righteous deeds, that there is a great reward for them.
In the name of Allah, the Compassionate, the Merciful, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu alaikum. Welcome to another edition of the program, Insights into the Holy Quran, by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hawza Seminary of Qom. Please stay with us.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. In the name of Allah, the most beneficent, the most merciful. Hello everyone, brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi with you with another edition of the program Insights into the Holy Quran. In this edition of the program, we'll try to have a look at the commentary of chapter Shu'ara, the 26th chapter of the Holy Quran. We'll be back after you listen to the verses we're going to discuss in this episode. Now let's listen to 137th verse up to the 140th one.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
In the name of Allah, the entirely merciful, the especially merciful.
قالوا سواء علينا أوعظت أم لم تكن من الواعظين.
They said, it is all the same to us whether you advise or are not of the advisers.
إن هذا إلا خلق الأولين.
This is not but the custom of the former peoples.
وما نحن بمعذبين.
And we are not to be punished.
فكذبوه فأهلكناهم إن في ذلك لآية وما كان أكثرهم مؤمنين.
And they denied him, so we destroyed them. Indeed, in that is a sign, but most of them were not to be believers.
وَإِنَّ رَبَّكَ لَهُوَ الْعَزِيزُ الرَّحِيمُ.
And indeed, your Lord, He is the exalted in might, the merciful.
Brothers and sisters, as you were previously with us, and we were discussing these verses, إِنْ هَذَا إِلَّا خُلُقُ الْأَوَّلِينَ وَمَا نَحْنُ بِمُعَذَّبِينَ. This preaching is not but a custom of the ancients, وَمَا نَحْنُ بِمُعَذَّبِينَ, and we are not going to be punished. From this part, the Holy Qur'an takes the rest by saying, فَكَذَّبُوهُ فَأَهْلَكْنَاهُمْ. So they belied him, then we destroyed them. إِنَّ فِي ذَلِكَ لَآيَةٌ. Verily in this is a sign. وَمَا كَانَ أَكْثَرُهُمْ مُؤْمِنِينَ. But most of them do not believe. وَإِنَّ رَبَّكَ لَهُوَ الْعَزِيزُ الرَّحِيمُ. The 140th verse says, and verily your Lord, certainly He is the Mighty, the Merciful.
We hope and pray that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala blesses us with the ability to cover more of His divine
In this
word.
Series of programs, we will inshallah discuss the Holy Quran with a thematic
approach. We will inshallah discuss the chapter.
وتمثل القرآن في أخلاقه وفعاله فيه الفؤاد تعلقا وتلاه في جنح الدجى متدبرا.
The context in which Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala speaks in this verse is the context of mentioning the ills and problems and evils of the people of the book, the previous nations who have received revelation, and more particularly the Jew.
Now let's listen to some of the verses of the Holy Quran.
First, let's listen to a few verses.
Now let's listen to some verses of the Holy Quran.
Insights into the Holy Quran by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hausa Seminary of Qom.
So these concluding comprehensive sentences that were repeated at the end of the events of the other prophets as well, Prophet Noah, Abraham, and Moses, shows the importance of the fact. مَا كَانَ أَكْثَرُهُمْ مُؤْمِنِينَ. Most of them did not believe. Most of them do not believe. The majority of the people were not believers, were not from among the believers. And this shows that the criterion is not the quantity, but the quality. And this is what most of the time the enemies of Islam try to deceive the Muslims, the true believers, with. They showed their own majority of group, and they tried to deceive the Muslims. They tried to make them scared. But the Holy Quran explicitly announces that the criterion in your eyes must not be the quantity, but of course the quality. So, after all, these concluding sentences mean that in this event there is a clear sign, إِنَّ فِي ذَلِكَ الْآيَةِ, concerning the power of Allah, concerning what the Almighty Allah is capable of, concerning the Prophet's perseverance, and the evil fate of the tyrants and oppressors, the evil fate and destiny of those idolaters, the ones who denied the prophethood, and yet most of them did not believe. And at the end, the Holy Quran says, وَإِنَّ رَبَّكَ لَهُوَ الْعَزِيزُ الرَّحِيمُ, and verily your Lord, certainly He is the Mighty, the Merciful. This verse means that your Lord conciliates and respites enough, but when it is the time of punishment, when the time of punishment and chastisement arrives, He is so strict that there remains no chance of flee for anybody. لَهُوَ الْعَزِيزُ الرَّحِيمُ, He is mighty, He is at the time of punishment so strict, but at the same time, even at that time of being strict, Rahim, He is merciful. As you have seen, we have many instances of the word Rahim in the Holy Quran, specifically in the beginning of every chapter of it, Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. The word Rahim has been repeated throughout the different verses of the Holy Quran to emphasize on the fact that at the most severe times and challenges of your life, if you return to God, He will accept you on condition and provided that you turn to Him with sincerity. This is the importance of belief and faith in the Almighty Allah and in the Lord of the universe for the ones who try to believe in Him, for the ones who have recognized Him as the absolute cause. Thank you, brothers and sisters, for staying with us in this episode. We ask the Almighty Allah to set us among the guided ones and the people of the straight path. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Don't be saddened by what you see, by all the lies and treachery. Life is cruel, but don't worry. In your heart lies the key to unwind all the secrets. This life we see.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parstoday.com. Until the next program, take care and goodbye.
Things always worked for me, worry, and that's when faith begins.
Economic divide.
The year 2023 will be a year of great economic strides for the UK. Unfortunately, that's wishful thinking, coming off a Christmas wish list probably, because the UK's economy will not do well in the year 2023 for a host of reasons. Like what? Well, that's what we're going to tell you. But consider this. Things are looking so bad for the UK that some analysts have said that the UK may experience a lost decade. Some of the highlights coming up in this program. First, the UK GDP growth. Let's find out how it's doing. recession that could turn into a lost decade, is what I just mentioned, the recession leading to that. Then you will have continual economic contraction, which is the worst in the G7 when you look at it comparatively. Next up, some UK economic indicators. Again, not that great. Taking a look at the energy crisis that it's experiencing. Then you have poverty at 22%, wage decreases 3.9% annually, and negative quality of life. All these contribute to a bad state of economy for the UK. And then something that's plaguing the UK, and more so probably in this new year, which is it has started already, UK strikes, 1.1 million working days to industrial action have been lost. Vast parts of the economy have been affected to continue for the year 2023.
UK has begun with a wave of strikes by British rail workers, which has disrupted the return to work for millions of commuters. This is the latest bout of industrial action to hit the country. Railway workers are demanding better working conditions and higher wages. This is the worst crisis in Britain since the 1980s.
Weeks. The government have contacted us late last night saying that they want to hold some talks next week, but from a period from December the 15th when I last met the government, they've done nothing. They did nothing in the intervening period. We gave them 3 weeks' notice ahead of this wave of action. They took no measures to broker a deal or to get a settlement, which is really disappointing for us, and I'm sure it's disappointing for the public as well, but the government holds the key to this and they're not willing to use it at the moment.
As the country is facing a surging inflation and years of stagnant wage growth, this has left many workers unable to make ends meet. But railway workers are not the only group of people who have walked off their jobs. Nurses, airport staff, paramedics and postal workers have also joined the industrial action.
Obviously inflation has gone through the roof. People are struggling to keep their heads above water. They deserve a pay raise. They've worked all through the pandemic for the 3 years to keep the railway running. So the fight will continue. Obviously, the government's blocking all the train operating companies and our Network Rail to negotiate with us. Our General Secretary will be in talks next week, so we'll have to wait and see how we're going to go.
To demand higher pay, the government has called on union bosses to return to the negotiating table. The inflation rate in Britain is hovering around a 40-year high, reaching 10.7% in November. But the government has refused to heed calls for higher wages. The refusal by the government has cast a gloomy outlook over the state of affairs in the coming weeks and months. That means there is no end in sight to the crisis, which has been dubbed a new winter of discontent. According to the polls, two-thirds of Britons support the nurses' strike.
It's time now for a social media post, and the angle we went after in terms of the ones we picked is to see how much anger the average Brit is feeling in terms of placing the faults on the UK government as opposed to any other factors. Of course, you be the judge. First up, worst month since records began. This would be for the year 2022, December of last year. Next, how long are we going to allow the government to just get away with this breathtaking level of dishonesty about the catastrophic impact of Brexit on the UK economy? Next, India overtakes UK to become the fifth largest economy in the world. This pick was interesting. This is the Tory trade minister celebrating a trade deal with South Korea that could be worth up to £1 million over 5 years. This, word we can't pronounce, knows that Brexit is costing the UK economy tens of millions of pounds an hour right now, and it's getting much worse. Then, great news for British farmers who can now sell pork to South Korea. We have removed the barrier which blocked exports of products such as bacon and pork sausages and could be worth up to £1 million over 5 years. Okay, sorry. I mean, these are the ones we had someone pick for us in the Economic Divide that researched it, again, to give an overview about how people are gauging things when it comes to the economy. Let me introduce our guest for this edition of our program for our first Q&A. We have Clive Menzies, researcher and analyst of political economy, who writes at outerside.org, joining us. Clive Menzies, welcome to Economic Divide. Okay, the state of affairs for the UK economy, which I'm sure you probably have an idea of, bracing for a recession, some say it's already in one. The ONS is saying that the economy shrank 0.3% in the third quarter, and also a revised downgrowth in every quarter, stretching back to the third quarter of 2021. The question is, why is the UK the only G7 country whose GDP is still lower than before the pandemic?
Well, I think that there are a vast number of questions that relate to what you've just said, not least the validity of the statistics themselves, because I think official statistics are pretty misleading. But there is a much bigger context to all this, which is to do with the shape of the economy globally over the last two decades at least, but certainly since the financial crisis of 2008. Essentially, I'm not convinced that the UK is the only country affected. I would say that we've been saying for some years that the world is heading for an economic collapse, probably of a magnitude that would exceed the 1930s depression. And this is largely due to the money system, where since the financial crisis, we have been printing money. The New York Fed, the Bank of England, the ECB, most of the central banks, major central banks, have inflated the money supply way beyond the needs of the global economy. And that will set in store hyperinflation. So what we have is a sort of balancing effect where you have this massive oversupply of money, which in normal circumstances would lead to very high inflation. But because they collapsed, a lot of the economic activity, not just in Britain, but globally, then that has counterbalanced this.
All right. Let me introduce our next guest for this edition of our Q&A, Dermot Hudson. He's an expert political economy at Unite Community Union, who joins us. Welcome to our program, Dermot. In terms of the 417,000 working days that were lost to strikes, is that something you were aware of? In order to find out from you the impact it's having. I mean, we're looking for a recession-hit economy that is by title, but on paper it's also so, according to economists. Also, we're looking at 205,000 working days lost in September. These are the worst strikes since 1990. 1.1 million working days, if I'm reading that properly or correctly, lost due to industrial action since June. What impact will all of these strikes in particular have on the UK economy?
Right. Okay. Well, I think it will have obviously some impact on the British economy, and obviously a negative one, because it will cause lost production lost working time. The transport strikes will mean that some workers will not be able to come into work. So it will cause losses. However, there's also a lot of working days lost in the UK due to sick leave, due to workers being ill and also due to workers being injured in industrial action. At the same time, NHS is in a very poor state. So you could argue that this is also a factor damaging the economy. And of course, if the employers were prepared to pay decent wages and increase wages in pace with inflation, there wouldn't be strikes. It's as simple as that.
All All right, time now for our info news section of the program. As usual, this is where we review some economic news from around the world. First up, we're going to take a look at Brazil. Brazil is having a host of problems, but this particular piece of news is good news for the Brazilian President Lula da Silva in terms of his first move. Now, Lula has halted the privatization of Brazilian state companies. The national oil giant Petrobras, which is the big one, will remain under government control. That's big news. Now, aside from Petrobras, the order for the Postal Service is also in the works, and the federal government's broadcast network is going to be part of that privatization that's now not going to be in the executed, but to come under government control. Lula has called for ensuring a rigorous analysis of the impacts of privatization on the public service or on the market. So this is a summary of the reasoning that he gave behind this. However, many are seeing that as a positive move. Next up, we're going to take a look at a stark warning by the IMF. We have mentioned the IMF in Economic Divide on plenty of occasions, but this one really is a piece of really bad news. I don't know how else to say it. The warning from the IMF where Kristalina Georgieva says that a third of the world economy will be hit by a recession for this year, the current year, 2023, the new year. She said that this year is expected to be even tougher than the year 2022, as the United States, the EU, and Chinese economies are going to slow down. She said, we expect one-third of the world economy to be in a recession. That's terrible. And even countries that are not in a recession would feel like it is a recession. And as a result, hundreds of millions of people are going to suffer because of that. Gosh, that's not good news for this new year, is it? All right, next up, taking a look at Ghana and its economy in terms of how it's doing. Well, Ghana, it was Africa's rising star. However, it ended up in economic turmoil. How did that happen? I mean, Ghana is a major coca and gold exporter, so why is this West African nation battling its worst economic crisis, to be said, in decades? It is currently, as this particular piece of news said, it is currently battling its worst financial crisis. It's because of inflation. It's hovering at a record 50.3%, and that is the highest in 21 years. So that's at the top of the list. Why did it get to that point? Maybe that's a good topic for one of our programs. Next up, a look at Italy through the lens of the EU, where it is worried about that country. The European Central Bank rate rises have exposed fears for Italy as Eurozone's weakest link. It is a Eurozone country that is set to be most prone to a debt crisis, as the European Central Bank has raised its rates at this point and is buying fewer bonds in the coming months. Italy was named as the Eurozone country most at risk of an uncorrelated sell-off in its government bond markets. Obviously, that would be a big worry in terms of Italy, which is one of the top three economies of the EU. Those were the topics we picked for this section of the program called Info News. We would appreciate it more if you send us any ideas about where you are in terms of the economy, at least. We would really appreciate that.
Listening to Economic Divide. The series looks at the financial health of the economies around the world and its impact on countries. You can listen to Economic Divide on Mondays and Tuesdays on IRIB English Radio.
It's time now for the in-depth section of the program. Over the past year, the Conservative government in the UK has engaged in a shocking campaign of denial and misinformation about the impact of Brexit. That's right. We're going to be taking a look at that here. Its dishonesty, for lack of a better word, on a breathtaking scale, is something that needs to be looked at, as we're about to see. First, the difference in performance between, quote, the projected UK economy. Now, we're taking a look at the projection. And the real economic performance is quite unbelievable. When you take a look at the years between April and June, is where we looked at, the economy was 5.5% smaller than it would have been had the UK stayed in the EU. And the year-to-June lower growth cost the government £40 billion. And that those are tax losses. This is a significant amount of lost revenue, which means there can be no doubt that the UK economy is significantly smaller as a result of Brexit. Now, Brexit has had other negative impacts, lowering both business investments and goods trade, although trade in services is largely the same. Now, in terms of the generation of taxes, it is also interesting to note that almost all of those tax rises would not have been needed if Britain had remained in the EU. Okay, so there you have it. Let's find out what our guest thinks. Clive Menzies, researcher and analyst of political economy, who writes out outerside.org, rejoins us. Clive Menzies, welcome back to Economic Divide. Taking a look at the official figures of the UK in terms of the indicators, we're looking at 22% of the people in the UK are living below the poverty line. 60% are getting by, median household income are getting by with lower expectations, with wages falling 3.9% at this point, the fastest rate in 13 years, 3.9% annually. These are the economic indicators. What can an austerity-driven government do about this, do you think?
Well, as we've said some years ago, there is no more armory left in the toolbox to combat these things. Basically, people are getting poorer because they have been plundered. The amount of debt that has been raised for COVID, for the financial crisis, for Ukraine, there is just debt everywhere. If you look at the London skyline, there's construction everywhere, all funded by debt. So obviously people are getting poorer. They're having to pay more for electricity, food, etc. But they're also beginning to realise that a lot of the charges that are imposed upon them, we also have a problem in London and more further afield of imposition of low traffic neighbourhoods where they're issuing fines and charges for driving. So there are many pressures, but people are awakening to the fact that this is now a system of plunder and exploitation. And I think what we're going to see is a grassroots blowback against this authoritarian shift that has just accelerated over the last 20 years and at a much higher rate over the last 3 years.
All right, that's Clive Menzies. Let's find out what Dermot Hudson thinks. Dermot Hudson is an expert. Political economy at Unite Community Union, who rejoins us. Dermot Hudson, welcome back. I asked our guests there about the economic indicators, which are pretty bleak. 22% of the people living below the poverty line. They're getting by on less than 60% of median household income. Wages have fallen 3.9%. What else can I tell you? That's the fastest rate in 13 years. Total wages have fallen 3.9% annually. Through the quarter, what can an austerity-driven government, which is what it has said based on Rishi Sunak's announcement, do to make the situation better for the people in the UK?
Well, firstly, I think that the poverty rate is much higher than the official statistics indicate. And secondly, I also believe that the inflation figures do not reflect how high living costs are rising. You know, the cost of some food items has nearly doubled. Energy prices have doubled and tripled. So, you know, I think inflation is far worse than the government's official statistics are saying. To answer your question directly, well, a government that's committed to austerity, to attacking the poor and the working class, cannot do anything. What we need is a people's government.
Strikes and industrial actions are not the only problem that the UK government is facing. The UK economy is facing a gloomy outlook in the coming years. The UK economy is expected to face a sharp fall in household living standards. The economy is set to contract 1.2% over the course of this year. This is well below the other G10 or group of 10 major economies. Experts believe the UK faces a lost decade of growth if action is not taken to address slumping business investments and worker shortages.
So,